At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
Good afternoon.
Is she going to move the podium?
You've heard a lot.
Here we go. Podium moving.
You'll stay awake so you can hear me too, okay? So it's been, what, 2.5 weeks, I guess, since you started this venture with us, and you've heard an awful lot. And I'd like to take you back to my opening statement. In my opening statement, there were some things referred to today that I'd like to address. The first one is that I stood up in my opening statement and said all of these wonderful things about Dan Markell, and then I called witnesses to attack him. That is not true. That is not true. In fact, the defense is the only part of this case that actually elicited evidence through testimony about the good qualities of Dan Markell. We elicited that on cross from his ex-wife, Wendy. And all of the things I told you in opening about what a wonderful man he was, a wonderful father, well-educated, successful, we elicited that testimony. And criticized today for having two witnesses who came and testified on the stand about the dissolution case and things that had been filed in it. That was not to attack Danny Markell. We didn't put that evidence on. The state is the one that made it an issue. Jesus Christ. They put those documents into evidence, the things that Mr. Markell had filed. So we're the defense, and we represent Donna Adelson, and we're just supposed to say, okay, well, they've put it in. Let's just let it sit there. We have an obligation to represent our client. And what happened in that divorce, whether it was contentious or not, was an issue the state brought up. They've been calling this a bitter custody battle for years. And they started this case by saying the same thing. So to have the people who were actually involved in the case point out that there never was a bitter custody battle is important, because there never was one. There was never a time when they were fighting over somebody having access to the children. In those pleadings, nobody says, you can't have them, I've got them. You can't have them, I've got them. When they filed their initial pleadings, they did what everybody, according to the lawyer who was on the case for Mrs. Adelson, meaning Wendy, on the case for Wendy, they all filed their typical pleadings. And in the beginning, you ask for certain stuff, and she asked for $5,149, maybe for a tax purpose. But there was never one single time, and you can't be convinced that relocation was the issue, where they were going to take Danny Markell's kids away from them. If you believe that, you are ignoring the evidence that the state of Florida put on against Donna Adelson. And when I told you in opening that this was all about theory and belief of what a motive was, and there was no evidence that a crime was committed by my client, Donna Adelson, that is exactly what has happened in this courtroom. The state is ignoring the evidence that came in through their witnesses that support our defense, and instead they stand before you with calls and text messages, and they tell you what they mean. That's not evidence. Their argument about what a conversation means is not evidence. You decide what it means. You've got it in front of you, and you have to consider it in the context of all of the evidence that's presented, not just what the state puts in, but what the defense puts in. And I know at some point when we were putting on evidence, you all were looking probably at me like, what are you doing? Who cares?
We were.
Some of those little things matter, and I'm going to cover those in the defense, and you'll see why we put those things in that didn't seem like that. I had a hoot to do with anything because they actually did.
Jesus. This is like... She's having like a narcissistic meltdown.
Near the beginning of the case, I don't recall who the witness was, but near the beginning of the case, the state, through a law enforcement officer, elicited testimony about how this event transpired, this brutal killing of Danny Markell, how it transpired, and how they were able to break the case. And what did they tell you? They told you they broke the case because Luis Rivera, who was one of the killers, decided he would cooperate with the state of Florida in exchange for a deal, which for his crime, he ended up, the testimony was, he got 7 more years for committing that crime. This is the man who got in the car, got the gun off the street, drove up to Tallahassee, Florida, stalked, is the best way I can describe it, Danny Markell in a car with his children from his home, watched him take his little boys out of his car and put them into the daycare center, followed him again to where he went to work out at Premier Gym, and sat in wait for him. And then when Mr. Markell came out, trying to work some things out with his ex-wife, Wendy, about having the kids and who's picking them up at what time, even leaves her a really nice voicemail that they could get together and walk at the school to talk about the education of their older child, where he was going to be going to school because he was going to be starting kindergarten. And Wendy pushed back. You know, she pushed back. This was his time with his little boys, and she's telling him, no, you know, I've got plans. Well, it wasn't her time to do that. So leading up to his death, she's arguing with him over about an hour and a half worth of time that she thinks she's entitled to with the kids, but it's his time. And I agree with the state of Florida. The most important thing to that man was those little boys. And he fought for every minute he could get, and rightfully so. Then he drives home in his car while he's on the phone, and Luis Rivera, driving the car that's been stalking him all day, pulls up behind him in his driveway. Sigfredo Garcia gets out and shoots him twice in the head, and they pull off at a pretty high rate of speed and leave Danny Markell dying inside his garage. Left him to die. Those are the people that killed Danny Markell. Those two people. And the state has all kinds of arguments about how Mrs. Adelson's involved because she said these things about him. And we'll get to that in a second. But if Luis Rivera is telling the truth, what did he tell you when he got on the stand? What did he tell you? He said, and this is.
Oh, here we go.
This document dated March 11th, 2025, when he was deposed. And those numbers and circles are his. And he testified to you.
You're missing out.
Catherine Meg Benoit is the person that elicited Sigfredo Garcia to kill Danny Markell. Now, her versions change over time, so we'll have to address a few of those.
What is this even?
Can you pause for a second?
Didn't even know Luis Rivera was involved.
Yeah.
Is this like an artist rendering and somebody decided to put their stamp on it? Like, I did this. If you can't see this, there was actually somebody who signed it and dated it.
I think it's an overhead projector.
It is.
Yeah. It's an overhead projector. They're using an overhead because there's like a marker. Like she numbered like the people 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, but it doesn't really make any sense. It's just numbers next to heads. And there really is no sensible way of following this thing. And then somebody's signature is on the side. Like this is their piece of artwork from fourth grade.
That's what I was wondering.
And Yeah, it's literally going up on an overhead projector. So it's a step up from the big old poster board from Walgreens. But oh my, just are they drunk? I mean, is she? Oh, what is going on with this defense that they're putting these things together and going, we're going to present this to the jury. This is going to be a slam dunk. I mean, this is almost like you're trying to get her
right.
If you want to get her found guilty, here's how you do it.
Wow. Yeah.
They would have been better just shutting up at this point. But and I find it interesting at the beginning, that whole 10-minute thing had nothing to do. It was her own rage. It was her because she felt that she was being called out on something. It had nothing to do with much of this case. It was her feeling that she was wrong. So move on. Argue for your client. That was like your own professional bullshit that you're calling out in front of a jury. This is insane. Let's continue.
This is a woman who the state has admitted lied first time, second time, third time, fourth time, maybe the fifth time. Every time she puts herself under oath and swears to tell the truth, she's going to say more. She told you she didn't even know Luis Rivera was involved, but the phone records that were put in by the state of Florida prove otherwise. Because during the time that they're traveling to Tallahassee, when she can't reach Sigfredo Garcia, whose phone is she calling? She's calling Luis Rivera. This woman can't tell the truth. But in any event, Luis Rivera then puts this number two next to Sigfredo Garcia because he's the one who actually killed Dan Markell.
Donna's a
number three next to himself. She's the one who got the gun and drove the car.
They should have bought a better attorney
and then away from the scene. This is the man that he says they killed. Who else on this document do you recognize? On this exhibit? Who else?
Here's Waldo.
Who's involved in this? Well,
when you use an overhead projector, you don't
know what claims are involved are pictured on this document. And he says, Wendy Adelson, she's the lady who wanted to get her kids back. This is why we were committing the crime. Wow. Wendy Adelson. And doctor, the dentist, he called him, which is Charlie Adelson, who he identified, was the one with Katie. This one are the reasons that they're coming to Tallahassee to kill Dan Markell. And I said, well, what about Donna Adelson or Harvey Adelson? No, they weren't involved. I said, would you put an X next to them if they weren't involved? And he did. Donna Adelson's name never came up, but Luis Rivera is telling the truth, according to the state. That's who you're supposed to believe. And he says, my client is not involved. There's some issues that I might address further, but I want to go through some of the things that the state stood up and told you. Relocation, relocation, relocation. That's the issue. That is the reason that my client had Danny Markell killed, because relocation was lost. Danny Markell was killed July the 18th of 2014. Relocation was done for over a year. That's the motive? It's been over for a year. And they said yesterday in court that the relocation issue didn't stop when Danny Markell was, the divorce was over. It continued going on. The emails showed that. There is not a single email that's been put in by the state that shows that my client, Donna Adelson, was continuing on a rampage about relocation. The last email that they showed you today that my client wrote about relocation was July the 19th of 2013. The divorce was final on the 31st, said and done.
It was about killing him at that point. It wasn't about relocation. They knew they lost that.
And she said it was done. Now, have Charlie Adelson and Wendy Adelson been honest with their mother? The evidence says no, they haven't been. Because the whole time Wendy Adelson is telling her mother, she's telling her mother that relocation is what she wants. She's the one who starts that. She's the one who asked her lawyer about it. The whole time in the spring leading up to this hearing, Wendy Adelson admitted in her testimony, she's sending these messages to her life coach and telling her life coach, you know, I think I want to stay in Tallahassee. But she didn't bother to tell her mother that. Her mother still thinks she's trying to get relocation. She does it in April. And then she writes to her again in May. I think I'm going to give up relocation. I can stay in Tallahassee. The kids will be close to their boys. There won't be any plane rides. And I like my job. It gives me all this flexibility. I'm going to stay. But she still doesn't tell her mother. She has her mother believing we got to fight for this relocation. She testified. Well, why did your mother get so upset? Well, she's venting to her mother about what she claims Danny Markell is doing. And she's venting to her mother about what she wants to accomplish. Only she's not being honest with her. On the backside, she's making other plans. It'd have been nice for my client, Donna Adelson, to know that. Because these emails that have been submitted here, which are proof that she wanted to have Danny Markell killed, would not have been written. And when she goes to her hearing on the relocation in June of 2013, she has her mother stay outside. Her mother can't hear what's going on in the hearing.
She shouldn't be there.
She had several witnesses to call beyond the two that got on the stand. And then after the judge made the comment, she gave up. She could have continued with the hearing and put her witnesses on. The judge could have ruled against her, and then maybe she has an appellate issue. She gave up because she didn't want it anymore, but she didn't tell her mother that. When she told her mother, well, this is how the judges ruled, the mother understood that through the court system it was done, but not with her daughter, Wendy. Because you can continue to negotiate all the way through a final judgment. And that's what those emails say. They do suggest some crazy stuff. They do. But she puts in there, we're trying to negotiate. We're trying to negotiate. Get this. You can still work on this. She doesn't know when she's writing those crazy emails that there's no reason to write them because her daughter agreed. You know, you can have a dismissal on an issue. You can have a denial on an issue. She agreed to it with prejudice, which means it is over. She already made an agreement. She's not going to seek relocation anymore. So my client is hanging out there trying to support her daughter, and now she's sitting in a court of law charged with murder because of what she wrote in emails. Because the truth is, you are here to judge my client based on her conduct leading up to and to the time of death of Danny Markell. That's her conduct. Can you consider things she said and did after to see if it corroborates that she was involved? You can. But her conduct leading up to the day that Danny was murdered is in this book that the state has entered with emails. It's separated between where you can see it, where they lead up to the divorce and then after the divorce until the time of the homicide. Now, my client did say ugly things about Danny Markell. During the divorce, she did. And the state has put them in. This is State's Exhibit 64.
Oh, here comes the poster board, guys. Brace yourself, right? Oh, sorry.
And they have emails going up through July the 11th of 2014. These are the bad names that my client called Danny Markell.
Look at Georgia.
During the course of a divorce where her daughter is constantly venting to her about what she says Danny is doing, she said some really bad names, and I'm going to say them.
Oh, my God.
I shouldn't say bad words in court.
Why?
She called me some ugly stuff. The first one that they wanted to put in was from 2011.
What is she doing?
Why? Stop
this. Why was she killed in 2014? They introduced this email from March the 28th of 2014.
I wanted to. Can you back it up to that second? I want to see that.
Oh my God!
What is 64A?
Let me see if it comes back.
Inside that email, they claim shows the. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Although you.
So
Elvis.
I don't get what the fuck she's doing here. No. She literally has brought up. She did this like on paint or something. Names Donna called Markell. I don't know what she wrote this in, but it's like It's not the correct type of program to do it in. Anyway, names Donna called Mr. Markell. This is what the jury is saying. One, royal couple, Mr. Markell's parents. Two, major fucker. Two or three, gibbers. Four, religious zealot. Five, royal jackass. Six, piece of shit. Seven, fucker. Eight, crazy. Nine, bastard. 10, Elvis. It's a top 10 list of the names Donna has called Dan Markell that she's presenting in closing arguments, trying to defend her client that she had nothing to do with this.
This almost aligns her with having done something. Whose side is she on?
And her argument thus far is basically Wendy was living her own adult life and was sick of Donna trying to insert herself everywhere. So her argument is, well, she just told her mother that, she didn't have to tell her mother shit. She's an adult. And in her relationship with her ex-husband and her children have nothing to do with her mother. But here Tom Petty is arguing that, oh my gosh, the mother needs to be the integral key player in all of this. And because Wendy didn't give her that opportunity to step in and say everything that she wanted to do, and because Wendy didn't do what she wanted to do, well, now she's being tried for murder because she started saying these horrible things and making these horrible statements, and now it looks like she murdered somebody because he's dead and she was talking. Like, of course it does.
Up from number six last week is Royal Jackass at number five.
And number one, coming in at number one.
She's gonna have a long distance dedication real fast.
An American top 40.
From the grave, Danny Markell.
Major fucker. Let's continue.
Wow.
I'm literally eating popcorn while I'm watching this.
To say bad words in court, she called him some ugly stuff. The first one that they wanted to put in was from 2011. He was killed in 2014. They introduced this email from March the 28th of 2011 at 64A. And inside that email, they claim, shows the hatred for Danny Markell. And you want to know why? According to their exhibit list here, because Mrs. Adelson referred to Danny's parents as, quote, the royal couple. And she and Wendy were bantering back and forth about some issues with Mr. Markell's parents. That's not hatred on Danny. It's not even hatred on his parents. We're sitting here with murder charges because she did something like that, called somebody a royal couple. She said other bad things. She called Danny a major fucker, jivers, which Wendy Adelson testified that she came up with that nickname for him.
Cute.
A religious zealot, and Wendy testified that the issues in their marriage included matters of he had now become more strict in their religion than she wanted to follow. That was one of their problems. She called him a royal jackass, a piece of shit, a fucker, crazy, a bastard, and she called him Elvis. That's why we are sitting here today.
No, it's not more than that, Jackie.
For somebody.
Sorry, you weren't paying attention.
That proves they wanted to have him killed. Are you serious? You call somebody some bad names and that means you wanted him dead? My client has lack of any ability to stop herself from saying things. She can't do it. And I'm not trying to be offensive to her, but she can't. And all of these emails that they have introduced prove it. She is not a one-word person. She goes on and on and on and on.
On and on.
And they believe that she had Danny Markell murdered because she said some bad words. There's not a lick of evidence in here that they submitted of what she did prior to July the 18th, 2014, where she said not a single word that she wanted him killed. She was planning to have him killed. She was going to find somebody to kill him. She was going to pay somebody to kill him. She was going to kill him. But she was glad he was dead. That's not in here. And this is it. This is it. Before he was killed. You're judging her conduct before he died, up to his death. And that's all you've got. And I told you that in opening statement. They have a lot of theories. And they like to spin evidence a certain way to make her look bad because she said ugly things. That is not proof of somebody having somebody killed. And that's it.
Is that all you got? We got more? Is that literally the end?
besides the relocation issue, which has been dead for over a year before he's killed. Bad choice of words. I apologize. It had ended over a year before he was killed. Now they want to bring in something called the grandmother motion. This is what had to push her over the edge. Their own witnesses said she didn't know about it. Let's see who testified to that.
Glad to see you're prepared today. Donna is just like...
I'm so
Wendy
scared.
Testified.
I sent to use that Groupon to get that attorney.
That she never showed it to her, and she never talked to her about it. But then there were two more witnesses for the state, and they were Craig Isom and Jason Newland. And when they testified on cross, they admitted that there was no evidence that that motion had ever been forwarded to my client. Not a single piece of evidence. What if she had gotten it? Do you want to know what it accuses her of? That a 3- and 4-year-old said that they called Abba, that she had called Abba stupid. Stupid. And that drove her over the edge. One, she didn't know about it, but two, somebody claiming you said the word stupid, that's what brings us to murder charges? It's unbelievable. But that's their spin that they want to put on it. Because they've got this theory that she's the mastermind. And then they stand up here in their closing and they say, everybody who's been charged in this case, they want to point at the other one, point at the other one, and point at the other one. No, 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 no. Who is pointing at these people? The state of Florida. The state of Florida is doing the pointing. They're the ones getting the warrants. They're the ones doing the investigation. They're the ones charging people, deciding who they're going to give deals to and not. That's them pointing the finger. That's not my client. There's no evidence of that. They bring the charges. They prosecute. They get the convictions. They get people sent off to prison. Not us. What? We're pointing the blame at the killers for killing them? They proved that those are the people who killed them. That's not us pointing the finger. They actually did it, and it's been proven. And we're distancing ourselves from Charlie Adelson? Let me tell you something. They elicited the testimony about Charlie Adelson over our objection, if you happen to remember that. It came in. Charlie Adelson is not on trial. You may be sitting in that jury room thinking, well, Charlie did it, and it sure looks like Wendy did it. That doesn't have an ounce to do with Donna Adelson doing a thing, not a single thing. If you think he did it, he's been convicted. He admitted in his testimony that he is the person, although he claims he was extorted, he is the person that took $138,000 out of his refrigerator size safe that he has in his house with the money exactly like he says he kept it, stapling $100 bills together in stacks of 1,000, staple, 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 staple. He said he took that money out of his safe and he gave it to Catherine Magbanua that night. Whether that's his girlfriend and they're still fooling around on the side, that's between the two of them. That's got nothing to do with my client. He did it. But now they want to say Donna Adelson did it. Pick one. You don't like our theory? That's what they say. You don't like our theory? Oh, well, you know, you like our theory on everybody else. Pick one. If you have prosecuted Charlie Adelson for paying the $138,000 staple, just like their other witnesses in this case said, why are they now saying Donna Adelson provided the money? Oh, wait. Oh, because Catherine Magbanua, who's been sentenced to life and is telling her sick story now, has decided she'd like to see her kid someday. So now she's going to come in and provide information that will help the state prosecute an innocent woman so she can go home to her children.
What about the checks?
That's what that's about.
What about the checks,
so,
Jackie?
Yeah, she claims that this all goes down. Charlie puts the money, Charlie, not Donna, Charlie puts the money stapled just like she knows he does into her trunk. She drives it the next day to Sigfredo Garcia, her baby daddy. He takes it out of the trunk, and a day or two later, she gets hers back. And she says he puts it in her closet, and to this day, she wants you to believe that that money sat in her closet, and she spent it along the way. The records that Ms. Hull testified to, showing all her cash deposits, she clearly was doing something with it, right? But to this day, she wants you to believe she has absolutely no idea how much money she had. Never counted it. Really?
What is she even arguing?
I don't even know where
she must think y'all was born yesterday.
Well,
but here's something. She's got this new thing she wants to testify to. That the money was wet, and Charlie told her that Donna had washed it. Her money's wet that she hasn't touched, that's been somewhere else for these number of days. Well, what did Louis Rivera testify to about his money that he got? He said it was weird. Well, how was it weird? Well, it was stapled in $100 bills, stacks of 1,000. Not a single word about wet. And he got his money before she did. He got it straight from Sinfredo. This washing money wet thing is nonsense. And they've already proven that it was Charlie Adelson's money that was paid through Katie Magbanawa to those two killers. Whoops, it's gone.
Does she not realize that if you put cash into a bag and seal it, and if it's wet, it's going to continue to...
standing up saying that the defense has suggested that Harvey is the one that did the Evite. We haven't said a single word, presented any evidence, or made any argument that Harvey Adelson is the one who created the Evite. Their witness that they called, Wendy Adelson, sat up there and said, what did she say? She probably did it because her mom doesn't know how. And then their other witness, Chris Corbett, Sergeant Corbett, who does all the media and cell phone tower stuff, he sat up there and he said it was clear to him from his research and investigation that my client, Donna Adelson, didn't have a clue how to work that. But she's responsible for sending out an Evite that Wendy says she did, where the names come up with guests who are going to be there that are Wendy Adelson, because she kept that name, and her two sons. So it's Wendy, the name of her two sons, and then Adelson at the end. If that's how it appears, Wendy did it, not my client. And there's more proof of that real quick to come. But the Evite thing is a non-issue. I just can't imagine what that is about. The state has argued that between the time the killers came to Tallahassee in June and the time that they came back in July and actually killed Danny Markell, that Catherine Magbanawa said in her testimony that between those two time periods, when she was discussing scenarios with Charlie, he would say he had a call from his mother, step out, have the call, come back in and say, oh, they're stressed. Catherine Magbanawa, not one single time testified to when that occurred, number one. Number two, if you've heard evidence in this case and paid attention, Charlie Adelson is not a one-woman man. He's got lots of girls. She doesn't know if that was really the mother on the phone. She doesn't know who he was talking to or what they were talking about. But she wants to get out of prison. So she's got information she's willing to share now. Charlie's business. There is a slide that the state had in its presentation this morning that they showed to you that shows that Charlie Adelson owned the dental practice up until 2015. Do you remember seeing that slide? Well, here they are again, ignoring the real evidence. They got a theory and they got to spin it some way. But the evidence from their expert witness, Mary Hall, financial investigator, forensic investigator, Mary Hall. She's up here testifying for them. And she says that Charlie Adelson was the owner of the Adelson Institute until 2020. And yet their slide says, oh, he sold it back to his father in 2015. That's not what the evidence is from their own witness.
And this goes to showing her innocence. How?
There was some argument from the state about some things that were in Mrs. Adelson's planner in 2023. around the time that Charlie Adelson was convicted, and they apparently were going to flee the country, take flight to a non-extradition country.
That's exactly what they were doing.
And there's a notation in there shortly after Charlie is convicted that says, cancel disability insurance. They want you to take what they believe that means as they were canceling their insurance because they were going away and never coming back. Could it be? Those were the words that were used. This is not a could it be situation. This is beyond a reasonable doubt. They have nothing other than that notation. Well, could it be that Charlie was convicted and he no longer needed disability insurance because he was going to prison for life? Just as likely. How about this? Could it be? Could it be? In State's Exhibit 142 on the front page that they showed you, there's this little notation. Notify everyone who was invited to the 70th birthday that party is off if that's what HJ decides to do. And that's on June the 13th. Could it be, the state says to you, that if the killing had actually taken place the first time the killers came up, then they'd be canceling the party because Danny would already be dead. What? Does that, where is the proof of any of this? Could that be what it means? This is not, could it be? And a birthday present, according to the state, for a 70-year-old man, is that they're going to have Danny Markell killed. Happy birthday. Let's have a party. What? There's no birthday present, according to Rob Adelson. Wendy Adelson, who was at the party and who was involved, and there are emails that tell this, involved in helping get a caterer for the party where the man came and cooked paella out on the balcony for everybody. But that's what Charlie decided to give. But you got to read the worst in every single piece of evidence that they present to you. You have to, paella. Because that's the only way you can get. And they want you to convict her.
Oh, paella.
There's no evidence that there was a birthday present to Harvey Adelson to have this man killed.
Oh, silly us.
None.
It was all about paella.
That's their theory, and they're still spinning it. And you got to ignore the witnesses that they put up there in order to follow their lead into that jury room and convict my client. Let's talk about Rob Adelson. They him in here and he got up there and he testified on the stand about allegedly all of these things that he claims his mother said. If you were paying attention by the time we got to cross-examination, what did we learn about Rob Adelson? Well, he's a doctor. And he's got little kids, so he's real busy, which is his explanation for why he rarely speaks to his family on the telephone and has, in that time period, only been down to see his family two times in a 2.5-year period.
Pause it for a second.
And he rarely talks to him on the phone.
This whole closing argument is Donna's grievances towards her family. This is this is like Festivus. This is the airing of grievances.
Yes.
She sat there last night with this attorney and just went off on everything she hates about her family. And that's basically what closing arguments has become. Because she didn't get up and testify because that would have been too risky. So she gave basically everything she wanted to communicate in her if she was going to testify to Tom Petty here. And this is how it's all coming out. Because if he didn't call the family enough, he could have done. This is Donna's words. This is Donna speaking. This is not Jackie. This is her coming through. This is her narcissism coming through her attorney. This is all this is. This is just her letting it fly.
God. I bet you're right.
But somehow Ms. Adelson has made all of these comments. This is a guy with an axe to grind. Right? He doesn't have any of this information. He's not talking to them. They got him to come for the birthday party. And what was his testimony? He's a busy guy. He flew in the night before the birthday. He was at the birthday party and got up the next morning, packed his bags and put him and his wife and his kids on an airplane and left because he was busy.
Good for him.
Right?
He's not hanging out with his family.
He doesn't want to. They're nuts.
He's nowhere to be found.
Good.
Oh, but you got to believe everything he tells you. A huge percentage of the argument of the state was, well, what did Rob say? What did Rob? Rob doesn't have the knowledge of anybody. He's not here. He lives in Albany, New York, and he's not around these people. But let's use her son, who's clearly estranged from the family, to try and bury her.
We just had a great comment about Giorgio Armani dying.
My client has been charged with
Jackie's ill-fitting suit.
Mr. Markell.
Great job, Diffy Dog.
Conspiracy, the planning to commit murder, and solicitation, hiring the hitmen that killed. We're going to go through the jury instructions briefly. The judge has already gone through them, but we're going to go through in a minute what actually is there that the state has to prove. And just like I said in opening, what the state thinks happened does not matter. What they believe happened does not matter. What spin they want to put on it does not matter. You can only make your decision based on the evidence presented to you. And up through the time that Dan Markell was killed, that's all they got. She said some ugly things, and oh, she meddles in her children's lives. Meddles in their lives. Gets involved in their divorce. She's a parent. She's just being a parent, not a
that's
killer.
That's not...
She's not a murderer, bitch.
No.
They haven't proven that to you.
Wonder what her kids are saying right now, if she has any.
Right?
Like, oh, let me tell you, bitch.
Just like I told you in opening, what they were going to be able to prove, and that what you were going to hear a lot of evidence about, lots of introduction of exhibits was going to come in. They proved that those two men killed Danny Markell, that Catherine Meg Donawa was the one who found the killers, that Charlie Adelson is the one who paid the money. That's it. Oh, and Wendy Adelson is the one who wants to get her kids back. That's why they're killing him. Nothing about Donna Adelson. We sat here for days listening to testimony of witness after witness getting on the stand. Not a single one of them connected my client to Danny Markell's murder. Not one.
Apparently she wasn't there.
Yeah, right?
What trial were you at?
Right? Huh?
I think the state introduced a couple of exhibits. They would be 64C and F.
Donna's getting...
I'm so screwed.
Donna looks toasted right now. They
Sorry,
got the
I can't
camera
do technology.
On her.
Somebody has to help me.
Oh my goodness. Can't use the Tom. Tom Petty's not doing technology.
Where she's giving her daughter advice on what she should do, preparing for mediation. Oh, how terrible of her. But what they didn't want you to see in this email, you see that highlighted part? If she thinks she's going to have him killed, why is she telling her daughter in mediation, make sure in the final order that he has to pay half of this expense and half of that expense and extracurricular activities and tennis lesson and baseball teams and travel? Well, who cares if they're going to kill him? Why is she writing that? Negotiate. Shame on her getting involved in her daughter's divorce. Negotiate. Let him know that you want him to see his children. And they talk a lot about this bribe. Bribe this man. They were considering giving him $1 million to relocate because he had already lived in Miami with Wendy. Relocate back to Miami. He taught, according to Wendy, 2 days a week. He could commute by airplane. They were willing to pay for plane tickets, give him money to buy a house, expose his children to a more strict Jewish environment where they had Jewish schools and all kinds of activities and be around more kids, kosher like Danny. Relocation was never about taking those kids away from him. It was, how can we make it happen? You can live in the same city, we can co-parent separately, but be together, be around each other, and all have family support. Shame on them for wanting to help him like that. They act like they were doing something illegal. That's not illegal. You heard the woman testify. It happens a lot in divorces. People offer money to get certain things that they want, or they concede something they're entitled to. But if Mrs. Adelson does it, she must be up to no good. This grandmother motion, I want to point out something to you for just a second. That would be 60JJ. The state calls this the grandmother motion because they're prosecuting grandma. Sounds kind of cool, right? There's this terrible motion, this grandmother motion that was filed against my client, Mrs. Adelson. This pleading is actually entitled, let's see here, former husband's counter motion for enforcement of MSA, which is marriage settlement agreement, on parenting issues and motion for contempt and sanctions. And this pleading goes on and on about, he says Wendy's refusing to facilitate video teleconferencing with the 3 and 4 year old, that she's failing to regularly facilitate telephone contact with the children, that she routinely violates the right of first refusal, resulting in the children missing days from preschool, that she violates her duty to inform that's in the MSA. She fails to follow clinical recommendations. She violates by refusing to communicate with Mr. Markell. She persists in inhibitory parental gatekeeping, refused to provide access to have both children on one of the child's birthdays. The only single complaint he makes about my client is she called him stupid, according to a 3 and 4 year old. And do this, but I'll try. Thanks. Number 6. This is the section. You can write a motion and put all your complaints in it, your legal argument, and then you ask for what is the relief that you want. He wants all kind of relief related to Wendy. And this is what they say. The state says that he's saying that the grandmother cannot have any unsupervised contact with the children. That's not what it says at all. It says consistent with the right of first refusal and safeguard the children so she doesn't call him stupid anymore. This does not mean she can't have unsupervised contact. It means consistent with the right of first refusal. If grandma's in town and she's going to watch the children, according to their marriage settlement agreement, he has to be given the opportunity first if he wants to take care of the kids. That's what was agreed to in the divorce. That doesn't say no more unsupervised contact with grandma. Now, besides her not knowing about it, what is the evidence? I don't want to mess this up. Well, you already have. What is the evidence that supports two things? One, that my client did not know it had been filed. And two, that Danny Markell was not trying to keep my client from having unsupervised contact with him. Well, the proof is from Wendy's testimony that he continued himself, because during the course of the marriage and separation and divorce, my client, Mrs. Adelson, didn't just continue to assist Wendy when Wendy needed help with the kids. She continued to assist Danny. And in fact, that motion was filed on March the 26th, and the testimony was for almost 2 weeks in April, my client watched the boys while both parents were out of town. And my client facilitated the Skype with the grandsons for Mr. Markell. Now, if he's really worried about her having unsupervised contact, is he going to leave them with her for almost 2 weeks in April? And he does it again and again. And the last time that he does it is on July the 11th. That's according to Wendy. He comes home and he needs help. She's going to go do something. And now it's his time to have the children. So he asked my client, Mrs. Adelson, if she could watch the boys. And she does. And she knows he likes this particular kind of banana bread that she makes. And they're going to mock us for this, but that's okay. He likes this particular kind of banana bread. It's got chocolate chips in it and no nuts. And so what did my client do? Before he came to pick up the boys the next morning, the evening before, she makes him a loaf.
All right. But she hates him. Innocent. There's a loaf of banana bread.
She wants him dead.
And paella.
Jeez.
And clearly he hates her because he filed a motion. It's unbelievable. Us sitting here is actually unbelievable. Now, I want to talk about the day that Danny was killed with respect to my client. We're not going to go through all the details again. But what is the evidence about my client?
That's what we've been waiting
for. The state has said that my client tried to set up an alibi for her daughter. I don't know how it could have ever been considered an alibi because the man was going to get there at 8 o'clock in the morning, and the evidence is he got killed around 11 o'clock. But
where'd she go?
State's Exhibit 64FF is from the Geek Squad. And the state presented earlier that not only did Donna Adelson send an email to Wendy that morning, or before then, actually, not only did Donna send an email to her about the appointment, but Harvey, the dad, did as well. And here is the form that was completed, not by Donna. They say Donna arranged it. Mr. Harvey actually made this appointment for the broken television. They had purchased a plan for protection on this television and believe they may get a replacement or a repair.
Not if you throw
When they made it, you have to fill out some information on the form. And what does this say? Would you be willing to accept a sooner appointment if one became available? Yes. Well, now, are you going to accept an earlier appointment if it becomes available, if you've got a homicide planned?
Yes, because
it doesn't make any sense. This is supposed to be her alibi, but they're agreeing you could come earlier if you want. And then the mother sends an email. Do we have that?
It's a perfect alibi.
And what she tells her daughter is, if you can't keep Friday, July the 18th between 8 a.m. and noon, call that number to reschedule. The contract is under Harvey Adelson's name with dad's cell phone number, but the purchaser is actually Miss Donna's name and cell phone number, and she provides her with a work order. Here, we did this for you. Like we do everything else for you, and apparently that's a bad thing according to the state, helping your kids this much. But
it is.
Here, we helped you out, but if this doesn't work out for you, change it.
Oh, God. She's a clone of her. You can tell
alibi.
That the dynamics in her world
are. You've got to read bad into every single thing they present to you to come to the conclusion that they come to.
Yep.
Now, let's talk about Defense Exhibit 71. There was, according to the testimony that you heard from the state, Wendy Adelson was interviewed at TPD the day that Danny was killed. They went and found her at a restaurant, and they've introduced these pictures about what she did that day and where she went and how she took the long way around. But she's sitting at TPD being interviewed, and she has requested to be able to call her mother. And unlike other exhibits where the state hired someone to enhance it so you could hear the call better, they didn't do that in this case. And the recording is actually inside the room. You can see it. It's an interview room at TPD. And not only are you hearing what Wendy is saying, there's the victim advocate that testified that my client was shocked when she heard the news. But my client is actually on the other end of the phone, so it's not real easy to hear. But if you put the headphones on, you're actually going to hear some things. And you can hear what my client's reaction is to finding out that Danny Markell has been shot. Can we play that? If you could just please put your headphones on. It's not easy to hear.
It's going to sound like peanuts. Here's your moment, Donna. Time to shine with shock. You can play it.
I'm fine, and the boys are fine. Danny has been Nancy Perry. Dave isn't shot. And I don't think he's going to make it. And so I know. So I found this out around 1 or 2 today, and I'm at the police station, and I'm trying to help them figure out who may have done this. The boys are fine. I had Lynn and Alan pick them up from school, and they're with Lynn and Alan right now. And I'm gonna leave here soon and go be with them. But I really need you to come here and be with me. And I want you to either fly to Houston. Obviously, you can't commute right now, but I need you to get yourself together. If it's too much to drive, I'd really rather that you flew up. I'm at the police station, and I'm gonna leave soon. And with the boys before they go to bed. They're with Alan and Lynn, and they're totally fine. Yeah, the boys are fine, but they don't know anything yet. In his house, I know. So I just need you to calm down before you get in the car, okay? Okay, so, and it's, it's evening, so if you want to come here tomorrow. I have a lot of people that'll, be here with me, and, we'll have a lot of support. So I want you to take your time and just be safe in getting here, but I'd like you to come when you can, okay? Okay. All right. I love you. I have the car here, but Jane might take me. I'm not going to be alone. So I have a lot of support, and I'll be fine. If you could just come here, that would be great. He's in the ICU in the hospital. Okay, but be careful, okay? Okay. Love you too. Bye. Mom.
Can you pick me up a sub on the way over?
I haven't actually put the headphones on, but hopefully that assisted you in hearing. But like the victim advocate for TPD testified, she was shocked. She's not sitting home waiting for a phone call. Let us know that it's done. It's 7 o'clock at night. And Wendy's calling from TPD to tell her mother that Danny has been shot. She has to tell her to calm down before she gets on the road. And you can clearly hear her elevated voice. She's asking about Danny. How did it happen? Where was it at? Well, where's he at now? He's at the hospital. This is not somebody who's planned for him to be killed.
Because she's worried that he's going to make it through.
Now, the state has made a pretty big deal about the road trip that the 70-year-old man and 64-year-old woman take that evening when they leave their home.
She's locked. She's glitching.
It's 11 years into
this. What is happening here?
This July that just passed.
Good thing somebody slapped
the
CD player.
Before the investigator in this case, who's given testimony
done that
again and again, after he's deposed, decides, I'll go ride the route. 11 years. They've been claiming now, my client, arrested almost 2 years ago, that this ride is completely off, but they haven't even tried it themselves, right? And even when he testified, and also when Agent Sanford testified, first of all, he didn't do the whole route. He did a segment because he's determined that in this segment is where Mrs. Adelson was at for too long. Did you take any snacks when you did the ride? And he's only doing part of it. Well, yeah. Did you get some coffee? Yeah. But they've calculated this drive for these folks who have just received horrible news and they're clearly upset about it. that they had to be at their son's house dropping off money that was washed, because there's a period of time that it takes them longer to get to their hotel in Orlando than it should have. They took into consideration nothing with respect to their age, that they hadn't had anything to eat. They didn't calculate any time in to stop and get gas or to use the restroom or to maybe sit down and have a meal. None of that's counted in. It's got to be a strict from here to there, and you're not there, then you must be doing something bad and it must have something to do with murder. They give no consideration to that whatsoever. But what's stronger than that is their own testimony from their expert. They have all of these slides that they've shown you where they can show where everybody is in the entire world. And did you notice that for the killers, they had collected records with SunPass and cell towers, et cetera, and they have a whole map that they're showing you of where they went and what they got. They got the SunPass records for the killers. Agent Sanford said that my client was a person of interest from the beginning, but he had her locked in a year. And yet here we are 11 years later, and they never bothered to get her SunPass records. They can get them. They got the killers. If they want to tell you that they're stuck in a certain area and they've gotten off in a certain place, all they had to do was get those records. But they didn't do it. They can prove where the killers are, but not my client. But one thing for certain that they did say is they cannot put my client's phone at Charlie's house during this time period that they say that they took too long to get somewhere. They also testified that there is never a point in time that evening where Charlie's cell phone is hitting on a tower and either Harvey or Donna's cell phones are hitting on the same tower. They don't even have them in the same vicinity, much less the house. But they want you to believe that means Mrs. Adelson was there dropping off money. They have no evidence of it. It's just their theory. That's all it is. You can't convict somebody based on theory. You have to have evidence beyond a reasonable doubt.
I think they do.
How about this text message that says outside your house?
Rebuttal's going to be good.
Outside your house means outside your house. I'm not saying that's illogical to jump to that conclusion, but do you have any evidence of it? No, they can't put her there. And according to State's Exhibit 142, if Mrs. Adelson was at Charlie's house, what in the world is she doing hanging outside for over 30 minutes before he gets there? She's got the garage door code to get in, but she's outside the house. They introduced this. She had talked to him, according to their records. She had been on the phone with Charlie. She talked to Charlie. And then later on, they send this text message, and it could mean many different things. But it would have been 30 minutes while they were waiting there for him to get there. And there's no reason for them to be outside the house because they know he's not there. It took him 10 minutes to send, or 20 minutes to send a message back saying he was 10 minutes away. And then he had to travel there. They don't have proof that she went there. They want you to envision it and imagine it and believe it because that's their narrative. That's what they tell. And I don't think I said it before, but the witnesses, the additional witnesses that testified that Charlie kept his cash, these $100 bills stapled together, that was Miss Umchenda and Mr. Fitzpatrick. They both testified they knew Charlie well, and that's what he did. No evidence at all that my client did that. Do you remember back in jury selection? I didn't do it for Miss Adelson. My co-counsel did, Mr. Zellman. But he asked you a series of some similar questions, and he asked you, would you agree that the state could make a mistake in the theory of their case? Yeah. Would you agree that law enforcement could make a mistake in their investigation and determining who they think committed a crime? Yeah. That was the overall response that we got. It was asked of everybody who came up that got individual questions. questions as a group? Well, according to Special Agent Pat Sanford with the FBI, do you remember his testimony? According to him, he has never made a mistake. Not one time in his career has he ever thought somebody committed a crime and he ended up being wrong. You know what the problem is? When he thought she was a person of interest from the beginning and then he, according to his testimony, locked in on Donna Adelson, the path didn't lead to Donna Adelson. They tried to build a path with something as flimsy as these emails that they say are the motive for her to have him killed. They made some other mistakes. Rob Adelson, calling him to testify was a mistake because they've clearly relied on his evidence and he testified himself. He wouldn't have the basis to give it. He's never around. And then they called Patricia Byrd. That's their next mistake. She claims different ways that Donna was going to buy her some land and a trailer to put on it, a small car to drive and fix her teeth to testify untruthfully. She said that a white female investigator actually offered her all of those things. But then when it was pointed out to her that the investigator that came to see her was actually an African-American female, oh, it was her that did it. Then she wants to tell you that my client confessed to her. I asked her, did she do what they said you did? And Miss Donna said yes. Well, she's not clear on this confession because when Mr. Zellman was asking her questions, she couldn't remember if it was Donna said she wrote the checks or she confessed to the whole crime. But here's a woman sitting in front of you that has come up all of a sudden at the end of the game, and here she is claiming that an investigator offered these things and that was for false testimony, that Miss Adelson was trying to elicit false testimony, have her come in here and swear under oath and testify to things that were not true. Well, both investigators came in here and said that never happened. She was never offered anything. She never told us that Donna had offered her anything. Most importantly, she never told us that Donna confessed. None of that. She's facing going to prison, and she has an opportunity to come in here and testify against Miss Adelson so she can get a deal. What was she facing, 5 or 6 years? Here's the biggest part. Did you hear what the judge read to you this morning before he started with the jury instructions? He read to you a stipulation. As he explained, that means the state and the defense agree to certain facts and you must accept them as true. And what was the stipulation? Patricia Byrd was never on the witness list for Donna Adelson. Well, isn't that interesting? She was going to come in and testify falsely for Donna Adelson, and she's never been on a witness list. And then you got Drina Byrd. This is not just someone who is hoping for some help in her case. She already got it. Her testimony was she is a 27-time convicted felon and/or crimes involving dishonesty, facing 15 years in the Department of Corrections as a prison releasee reoffender, which means you get day for day with no game time. Here she comes saying she's got all this evidence and Donna's offering to do the same things for her that, oddly enough, Patricia Byrd in the same cell block has said is going to happen. What does she do? We tried really hard not to bore you by playing the whole tape, but there's an exhibit that we put in, and it's the video of where Donna and Miss Bernhardt are sitting at a table. Oddly enough, Miss Byrd wasn't there, and she told you that she was with Donna Adelson day and night talking about her case. She wasn't anywhere around when they're sitting at this table, but you can watch that video again. I would just like you to recall this. Who shows up to that table first? Drina Bernhardt does. Who shows up with paper and a writing instrument? Drina Bernhardt does. And while they're sitting at the table, is Donna sitting there just telling her? No, they're having a conversation. How does the writing start? Miss Bernhardt gets out her little hot pink folder, paper, whatever it's called, notebook, plops it open, shoves it towards Donna Adelson, and starts tapping on it. Let's get busy writing. You don't hear those words, but that's what she's doing. Here, write. And allegedly, she's going to do the same thing, give false testimony, and her name is not on a witness list. A little bit more about Catherine McBanawah. Actually, I covered that. So if this is all they've got up until the time that he died, just that she said bad things about him and helped her daughter with her divorce, what is the evidence that they have after Danny Markell was killed? They put this evidence in. They got nothing to show that my client was involved in any way leading up to the time that he was killed. But they elicited the testimony that it was 2 months after the murder when Charlie Adelson discloses for the first time to his mother what he knows about the case. Now, all she knows is what he's telling her, but it's 2 months after the murder when he's telling her, well, what happened was I got a girlfriend and I had told her about this $1 million offer and she said it in front of some of her friends and they've gone up there and killed Danny Markell and now they're demanding money. And so they said, if I didn't turn over my third of the $1 million, this is what he claims that they elicited. If I didn't turn over that money, then I'd be dead in 48 hours or they'd kill my family. So he goes into his safe and pulls out $138,000 cash, puts it in a bag, gives it to Katie, tells his mother 2 months after the homicide, now he's being extorted. She works at Adelson Institute. They want you to believe this is a family business. Does family work there? Clearly. But who owns the business? Who does the money belong to? Who is Mrs. Adelson writing and paying all the bills for? Who's she doing the salary for? Everybody there. Everybody there. So he tells her, write around $1,000 a month to Katie McBanawah. It'll save my life. They had this forensic investigator, and they didn't present anything to you, not a single check ever, that Charlie Adelson signed for his business because he had his mother paying the bills, doing salary, and other things at the dental office. That's him paying these people. She's doing her job because he says it'll save his life. She believed it was the truth. So she did what he told her to do. Was there pushback or not? We don't know. They didn't present any evidence about that. They claim she would have pushed back. Maybe she did. We don't know. But what we do know is it's 2 months after the murder before she knows what has gone down. That's their evidence. But she conspired with people to have him killed. She got the hitman to have him killed, and she wanted him killed, and he ended up dead. She doesn't even know about this going on. And the only version she knows is what her son has told her. Did she say, oh, the truth's coming out, the truth's coming out, the truth's coming out? She did, because that's what Charlie had told her the truth was. And that's her son. And she believed him. And she didn't want her son to die. She wrote paychecks at Charlie's instruction. That's not her. giving cash, and paying off murderers. That's a paycheck to Katie. That's it. That's all she did.
Hi.
So we're bumping along, and now we're in 2016, and it's a bump. Law enforcement testified to you that they created this scenario where they could try and get information to further investigate this homicide. So they've locked in on Mrs. Adelson, so they're going to set her up. Funny thing is, Mr. Sanford testified to what probable cause is that you have to have to get a wiretap on somebody's phone, and you have to have proof that a crime has been committed, and this is likely the person who committed the crime. It's not proof beyond a reasonable doubt. It's the same that you have to get a warrant to arrest someone. But when they do this bump in April of 2016 to June, who do they get wiretaps on? Charlie Adelson and Catherine Magbanawa. Not Donna Adelson. But they're just sure she's the mastermind behind this. So what do? They follow her. They watch her daily routine. They pick a location where she is taking her grandchildren, Mr. Markell's children, to and from school. And they decide that's where they're going to do this bump. This is State's Exhibit 113 of the bump on the street that took place on April the 19th of 2016. Am I in anybody for?
What is it? Okay, okay, bye.
Poor Donna. Look at her sitting there.
She knows it's done.
It's over.
I think she's, yeah. What a pathetic defense.
This is Adelson. How you doing? Just want to give you this. Listen, no, don't be scared. Listen, just want to let you know that we know that your family has been taking care of Katie and her friend Google for quite some time after your problem of more than a problem. And I want to let you know that my brother, he's incarcerated. He helped your family with this problem that he's had or more. And we want to make sure that you don't do some rough times. We want to make sure that you take care of what he's going through, the way you're taking care of Kane and Tupac. Well, this will explain it. Thank you.
What did she say? You scared me. And he goes on his little explanation, and her response is, I don't know what you're talking about. Now, the state says from what happens next, which is a phone call that Mrs. Adelson makes, she has to be involved in this murder because she doesn't call the cops. She calls Charlie. Well, why'd she call Charlie? Because Charlie has confessed to her his role in paying the killers back in September of 2014, that it's his money, claiming he's being extorted, claiming his life is at risk. That's who she's going to call, because guess what? Now this man is talking about the people who are involved in the murder. You're taking care of Katie. So yes, she calls. And the state wants you to believe that there's this huge made-up code. They allowed you to look at the transcripts when that was going on. And you looked, I watched, you were all intent looking at the transcripts and listening to the calls. If you go back and want to hear them again, you're welcome to do that. Yeah, she's so responding good to his questions and his instructions not to talk about this on the phone. But he keeps pushing and pushing and pushing. So she's trying to give him a hint without actually saying on the phone what's going on. These are hints.
It's not what that is.
Code words like the state wants you to believe. Could I have just 1 second, please?
So I believe this is where the judge talks to them and then they go on to a break.
Oh, so they're having a little moment there?
Yep.
Okay.
They're back in the corner chatting. There's
they're having a sidebar.
Are there snacks in the corner? Are they refilling their snacks?
But it looks like the jury hasn't left the room. So it looks like it's a it's
but
a
they're short... going to they're going to he's going to give a break to everybody and they're actually on break right now live.
Okay, great.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.